Good morning and welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black arts and culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. We are so pleased today to bring you an interview with the co-star of Gershwin's Porgy and Bess in its new, revisioning with the book adapted by Susan Laurie Parks, with the musical score adapted by Deidre L. Murray. And it's just a simply fabulous production. It's directed by Diane Paulus and starring Alicia Hall Moran and Nathaniel Stampley. And we have an interview with Nathaniel Stampley that we're going to play for you. It was pre-recorded just the other day. And Porgy and Bess is on stage at the Golden Gate Theater through early December. And I have some information for you so you can get discounted tickets through Afro Solo, a wonderful organization founded by Thomas Simpson here in San Francisco. So I'm going to play a song for you, and no, it's not from Porgy and Bess, unfortunately. But we're going to play a song for you, and then give you information about how you can get tickets at a discount, and then we'll go right into the interview because it is simply fabulous. So we're going to play a piece by Donald Duck Bailey, a wonderful drummer who has made his transition this fall season, and we miss him, but we have his music, so he lives on through his art. And I was thinking about playing a piece called Gone Now, just because of this wonderful piece in Porgy and Bess. That's a really wonderful song. Gone, gone, gone. Just sort of playing on that term, gone. So I want to play Donald Duck Bailey's Gone, and then we'll jump right into the interview with Nathaniel.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Donald Duck Bailey's Gone. And darn, I didn't know this was going to be the theme this morning, but those discounts are gone. Darn, they ended last week on the 20th, so that was a $35 discount too. So maybe, I don't know if anything's going to be extended, but if it is, you know, definitely check Wanda's Picks and I will let you know. But the production goes through Tuesday through Sunday at the Golden Gate Theater in San Francisco, which is located at 1 Taylor Street at Market, through November, through December 8th. So you can definitely get tickets for the production. Let me give you that address. Let's see. Best of Broadway. Dum-de-dum-de-dum. Let's see. You can visit www.shnsf.com for information about tickets. And for information about the show, you can visit www.shnsf.com/online/Porgy. But let me tell you a little bit about Nathaniel Sampley, who plays Porgy, as I mentioned. On the West End, he was in The Lion King, Disney UK LTD. On Broadway, that was in London. On Broadway, he was in the Broadway production of Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, where he went on. He was understudying the part, and he went on as Porgy in the title role, which now he is starring in. The Color Purple on Broadway, as well as The Lion King. Fiorella, Lost in the Stars, New York City Center's Encores, Abyssinia, North Shore Music Theater, Pacifica Overture, Chicago Shakespeare Theater, Strike Up the Band, Auditorium Theater's Ovations, Violet, Big River, Apple Tree Theater, the Skylight Opera Theater's Girl Crazy, The King and I, Link Up with the Orchestra of St. Luke's at Carnegie Hall, and Musical Introduction Series at 92Y. So you're going to just love this interview with Nathaniel. It was simply fantastic. And then next week, hopefully, we'll have some music from Porgy and Bess, and maybe we can get another interview. I'm looking to get an interview with the composer, the guest composer, so that would be really fun. So here we are, Nathaniel Sampley as Porgy at the SHN's Gershwin's Porgy and Bess with guest writer, the book adapter, Susan Laurie Parks, music score adapted by Deidre L. Murray, starring again Alicia Hall Moran and Nathaniel Sampley, Sumaya Ali, Denisha Ballou, Dan Barnhill, Danielle Lee Greaves, and David Hewley, as well as Alvin Crawford and Kingsley Lace, with a whole cast of fabulous, fabulous actors. It's just wonderful seeing all those black folks working. All righty, here we are. Enjoy. I just want to tell you that, go on the record, that I just love the revisioning of this classic tale. It's more like musical theater now, and in the retelling, you know, the way that Susan Laurie Parks sort of, I think she added scenes or something. I'm not sure exactly what happened to it, but but for some reason, and I love that you're standing up. For some reason, the best story is really, I really feel for her in a way that I hadn't noticed her before in the other, you know, traditional operatic version of Porgy and Bess.
Yeah, I think you know, obviously with, you know, with the help of, you know, Susan Laurie's pen and the direction from our director, Diane Paulus,
mm-hmm.
I think there was a lot of thought and care in expanding these characters. And so I think they really thought a lot about, you know, like Bess's addiction,
mm-hmm.
In a way where, I'm not trying to say that it's glossed over in the traditional opera, but it's really expounded upon in a way that's very immediate in our particular version.
Okay.
And that, you know, you really see her struggle of, you know, just trying to do the right thing, and but also really, you know, dealing with her past and the addictions of, you know, of the cocaine. So it's
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to sort of get that to embrace all of that in the traditional opera. So I think a lot of the, as I said before, there's a lot of care and thought was there, and you know, and to mention about, you know, Porgy standing,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not something that's new to just our production.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like in the 90s, you saw a lot more Porgies, you know, beginning to stand. I think even in the Trevor Nunn production that was done in Europe, you know, he had crutches and he was standing. In my opinion, I think it makes the love story a little more believable, that, you know, that Bess would really have this attraction, you know, to someone, even though he's disabled, but that, you know, he's a little more believable that, you know, she would find him even, like, sexually attractive to be with him. I think it works with him standing, even in a compromised position, but it's still, to me, it heightens that love story just a little bit more.
Well, it also heightens it because you're handsome.
Oh, well.
I mean, you're a very good-looking Porgy. The best-looking I've ever seen, and I've seen the opera 3 times.
Oh, wow. Well,
over the course of, like, 25 years, maybe.
Oh, wow.
And you're the best-looking Porgy I've ever seen.
Oh, well, blessed. Thank you. I'm sure the lighting and all of that stuff helped, so thank you very much.
No, when we saw you outside the theater in front of the marquee, you looked... Well, you look like yourself, and you're handsome and real, you know, like when you're not made up.
Well, Wanda, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And so that really, like, the two of you, Alicia Hall's, Moran's, Bess, and a handsome Porgy, even if he's disabled, I mean, it's just like, wow. You know, visually?
And then
with the music and your lovely voices, oh, my goodness.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, I just have to say, I mean, Alicia is somebody that is just an incredible artist, mm-hmm. and just a great woman on and off stage. I think, you know, not only is she just beautiful, but, like, I mean, her voice and her acting, you know, it's... She makes it very easy to fall in love with her every night. I'll put it that way. yeah, and you know, and you know, and we're great friends as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's really important about their Porgy and Bess's relationship is that, you know, that there truly is love at the core. And that it's the kind of love that I like to describe as, you know, life-changing love.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, like you meet somebody and, you know, and I think, I'm sure as adults we've all met someone that's absolutely changed your life for the better. And that, you know, you want to do things maybe you've never done before and you want to achieve things that, you know, you probably never even thought of doing. and that, you know, and if that person were to leave your life, how devastating that would be. Mm-hmm. And so for Bess, that she found Porgy, and they have this beautiful relationship that he sees her as just a beautiful woman and not someone who's addicted to drugs or struggling with her past, but like he sees her for who she truly is.
Mm-hmm.
And Bess the same way, where she doesn't just see this, you know, disabled guy, like he's a strong, beautiful man that she can now see her spending the rest of her life with.
Mm-hmm.
That when, you know, we see Porgy is away from her, that, you know, she struggles with, well, you know, how is she going to move on? Because now she can't be the same person that she used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Porgy at the end of the show. Like, after meeting someone like Bess, that you have to leave that community. You know, nothing else even feels or looks the same. So, you know, it truly is that life-altering kind of love that is so special that, you know, that's universal. Like, many of us have that in our lives, whether we have spouses or partners or loved ones right now, or have gone on, but you know your life is not the same, you know, pre and post, you know, meeting this person.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, certainly. Yeah, and that's something about the story that can really resonate with the audience and stay with them. You know, you think about addictions, you think about, you know, sort of the overwhelming presence of crack cocaine, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the black community,
mm-hmm.
and you think about the sentencing around that,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, unfair.
Yes.
And so yes. we have this prison system, and the law is in the story, and you see what they do in the play, and or the opera, and then you think about what's happening, you know, outside, off the stage, in, you know, in,
yeah.
in the real world, and you think about sort of the uneven application of law,
mm-hmm.
depending on one's race and one's economic status. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the community of Catfish Row that Porgy finds himself in, because what I thought, and it really resonated with me quite a bit after I saw the piece opening night, was how the community failed Bess, because, you know, your character, he lifts her up, and he is her strength. He helps her be strong, and then the community, I mean, literally, they turn their backs on her. And I'm like, wow, that is, wow. So it's our fault, it's the community's fault that Bess, you know, leaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Bess doesn't, you know, wait for Porgy to return, because they know that she's weak, you know, that she's getting stronger, but she's not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you know, she's you know, she's not using the happy dust, but it's still a struggle for her, you know. And so what Porgy does is, you know, he distracts her. He keeps the bad people away from her.
Uh-huh.
And everybody knows this is a small community, and yet when he's not there to hold her up, the community lets her fall. And I'm like, wow, that is so messed up.
Yeah, well, well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up. What's great is that, you know, like any community, you have varying opinions, you know, and so, you know, there is a sort of groupthink dynamic that's there with, you know, with Porgy. Like, Porgy is someone that everyone wants to make sure is doing well and want the best for him at all times. Now, someone like Bess and Crown, they are not from that particular community, but they have a lot of dwellings with that community.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, they are the outsiders coming in. And so, like any community, When there are outsiders there, you know, you have your dealings and, you know, like, sometimes it's just, you know, just business-like kind of dealings, or sometimes it gets a little more personal. But Porgy was definitely her shield, as well as true connection to that community.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we see her struggle at the very, very end of the near the end of the show, I view it more as, I don't want to necessarily say the failings of the community, but it is almost as if, you know, she's reinforcing what people thought from the very, very beginning anyways. So there's that dynamic of, okay, she's changed. You know, it's like when people go through a major, say, religious experience or something like that, and then they still have to come around some of those, their old community. Some people are going to look at them with a little trepidation, like, okay, you say you changed, but time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't just, you know, say you're a deacon in the church and you've been convicted of robbery. You get out of jail, I'm not just going to put you back on the deacon board and you're going to count the offering when you get back the next Sunday. Like, you know, like, time will tell if you're good. And that literally is a line that Serena says to Bess,
mm-hmm,
in the show. And so we see this time passing and like, okay, all right, well, she does seem to, you know, she looks different, she dresses differently, and her interactions even with the other women and men there is very different based on her love for Porgy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have somebody like Sportin' Life kind of attacks her Achilles heel, which is truly her heart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she cares about Porgy, and he's just like, hey, I don't know if this brother's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what are you going to do? We know that you're not from here, and we know how people think about you here, and at some point somebody might rat you out.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do? So look, let's leave here. How about we go to New York? So once again, kind of offering a new life for her. Because, you know, and to think about the justice system even then in the 30s, well, you know, if there was someone kind of dragged off by the police, I mean, truly, you're thinking you're not going to see him again.
Mm-hmm.
So that dynamic was very real, is very real. So he hits her at a very sensitive time. And that, you know, and then not only just the circumstances, but then he reintroduces the drugs to her.
Right, yeah.
And so at that, you know, when we're really, really vulnerable, we fall back to our major crutches,
mm-hmm,
or things that have helped us through our lives that we know the most. So she doesn't know a sober lifestyle as an adult, that she hasn't been living that way for very long.
Mm-hmm.
So we fall back into our old patterns. And so, you know, so the danger of people like Sportin' Life in our communities is that they hit us at very vulnerable stages in communities all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, some of us are dealing with loss. Some of us are, you know, dealing with just like pure heartache, you know, unemployment. You name it, you know, being illiterate, you know, just having a felony and, you know, unable to work. So, you know, people like Sportin' Life in our communities, they hit us in our most vulnerable places. And so, you know, that's the devastation, really, in our communities. And so that then when you have Mariah come back and you see somebody who falls back to that pattern, it's hard to instantly just forgive them And, you know, and she, you know, at this point, Bess is, you know, taking care of the deceased parent's child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, it's that's hard. That's a hard pill for anyone to swallow if that's what you already thought about somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've changed, and then they go back to who they truly, who you thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's a hard pill to swallow. I don't think she's really kicking Bess out of the community.
Oh, she took the baby. And was it Mariah or Serena that took the baby?
It was Mariah. But,
oh,
you know, but
okay.
You look at it, but Bess makes the choice to leave. You know, because, mm-hmm. you know, she still could. I mean, it would be tough. That's a hard hill to climb.
Yeah.
To stay.
Mm-hmm.
But you think about it, her one tie, true tie to that community, in her mind is thinking, well, Porgy will never come back. I mean, you know, this brother is gone, caught up in the justice system. He, you know, they can hang him in jail, or mm-hmm. they killed him on the way off to jail.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, well, where is my place here, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it's you know, so it's hard to just say that the community absolutely turned their backs on her. But you know, I mean, but you know, it's the heightened drama of that whole situation that makes it so heart-wrenching, because
mm-hmm.
you know she wants to do the right thing.
Yeah, and we know that if it's at all humanly possible that Porgy will return, and even inhumanly possible. So, you know, he's going to live, because if we're thinking about love and how, you know, sort of love is, you know, the substance of, you know, it's like it doesn't disappear. You can't get rid of it. It's
mm-hmm.
like matter, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Only it's, you know, more transcendental.
Uh-huh.
But you know, but she's not strong. We know she's not strong. Mariah knows she's not strong. And when the mother trusts her with her baby, it's like, oh my goodness, that was a tie to the community. And then to support I don't agree with you about the community. I mean, you're a part of the community, you know, your character, so of course you're going to be for them, right?
Yes. You know, because even at the very end,
mm-hmm.
you know, the only way he could truly, truly leave that community is with the blessing of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, begrudgingly, they give him that.
It's a real, he has to work for it. I mean, oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. Your
character really, really has to work for it.
Yeah, but, you know, but such is life. You know, like in communities, you know, most of us, you know, I can't speak for all of us, but most of us, where we're from, you know, they're not little bubbles of utopia everywhere.
Hmm.
And, you know, we all have various opinions and histories that are with us and guide us and shape who we let in and who we don't let in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so in that sense, in a way, you know, Porgy grew up before everyone's eyes. And now has reached a level of maturity where, it can't ever be the same now. Like, you know, that he can't just let other people make decisions for him,
mm-hmm.
or let opinions kind of fly over his head and he just kind of deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, now he's lashing out and saying, look, just that's enough. And you know what? I got to go. I have to leave here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is tough. It's so tough. And you know, I mean, but it happens everywhere, all over the world, where people reach a certain point in their lives where we have to leave what we know,
mm-hmm.
and go for things that we don't know.
Yeah, it's a hero's journey, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Porgy and Bess, you know, she's the catalyst, but definitely. She helps him realize himself in a way that he hadn't been able to in the more paternalistic type of way he had been regarded in the community prior to her entrance and their attraction, which precedes her entrance because he had been noticing her already according to the song.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's hard not to notice, you know, this beautiful woman coming in a red dress and red lipstick. And, you know, like when she comes in, she takes notice. And definitely as a, you know, as a straight man, you know, you're going to, whoa. She's, you know, and also there's the description that Crown has of her as the red-headed woman, and that is, you know, almost as if, like, she's the hurricane that comes in. So, you know, every time she's around, it's not going to be the same. Mm-hmm. Somebody like her, it just changes. The women are going to react a certain way, and the men are going to react a certain way. Mm-hmm. And you know, and we see that kind of play out throughout the whole show. Every scene she's in, it, you know, it kind of ruffles people's feathers, you know, pro or con, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting that you mentioned the hurricane, because I'm thinking about, you know, the Orisha Oya, who is, you know, who is the deity of the hurricane and the winds. And also she is the custodian of the cemeteries. And I just think about, you know, what you were talking about with Beth and the red and, you know, and that, you know, the imagery of, you know, the red is hot and it's passionate and it's fire and it's also blood, you know. And then you think, you know, you mentioned Crown, you know, who is a real strong presence, particularly, you know, coming in the person of Alvin Crawford. He is awesome. You know, he's quite a contender for you, your Porgy.
Yeah, hey, for anybody, right?
Yeah, he is like, oh my goodness, his person is just like so. I mean, he so fills, you know, the space with his presence, and he is just passionate about his best too. So we got these two men.
Yes.
That are passionate about this woman, and then his name Crown, and we think about the crown, you know, our head, and we think about the Ori, you know, in the Ifa traditions, like, wow, like all this stuff, you know, spiritual, you know, physical, it's like all these different levels of reading, you know, and this, and then, you know, you throw in this fabulous choreography, oh my God.
Yeah, man, well, let me tell you, Ron K. Brown, you know, just one of this country's greatest choreographers, and, you know, and his touch runs, you know, throughout all the movement, and he's someone that, you know, definitely honors our ancestors through his movement, and just a really thoughtful, creative storyteller through dance, and I think we, I think Diane was very, very smart to bring him on board, because it definitely is another element to what makes this particular production very different in the feel and look of any other Porgy and Bess that's been around.
Yeah, and I was just wondering if you could just tell us about some of the added scenes. I really noticed the scene where there's the mourning, you know, the cooling board, and I didn't remember if that was new, or was it expanded, but I think it's new. Is it new?
No, actually, that's all there.
Okay.
I think that's a hard question, because there are a lot of things that, you know, we have to deconstruct in the show that would be added. But I will say there are some book moments that are very different. For instance, one really just tender moment for me that always comes to mind is the scene after the sort of, you know, the divorce scene with Mariah and the company, and we see Bess and Porgy. They're the only two people on stage, and she's cleaning that basin where Mariah kind of dumped the drugs in there. That's a brand new scene,
mm-hmm.
where he's talking about, oh, he's gonna fix himself up for her, and you know, he sees her putting water in the basin to kind of clear out the residue of the happy dust, and
mm-hmm.
so he's happy to see that because he sees her trying, just, you know, trying to clean herself up and trying to do better. And it's the first time they've been confronted with the drugs and sporting life since they've been together. And that scene is just so tender to me, and really special, because then later on, sporting life comes right back,
mm-hmm.
and is offering her the drugs. And I mean, this Susan Lori Park's genius at work for sure.
yeah, sporting life is like a fly. You know, you can't get rid of him. He's like buzzing around. Like, oh my goodness, go away.
Yes. Well, and it's played brilliantly by Kingsley Leggs.
Yes, he is. I love his solo when he does that whole number. Is that new?
Which one?
The one
That's Leaving for New York?
No. Earlier in...
Oh, Ain't Necessarily So?
Yes, that's really nice.
Yeah, no, that's the original material. That's
okay.
All. Yeah, that's been there before, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, it's like...
Yeah, you know the thing that makes it fresh,
mm-hmm.
and what, you know, it, you know, because you've seen other parties,
mm-hmm.
Porgy and Bess, is that it's how we get in and out of those songs,
mm-hmm.
is what's different.
Okay.
So what precedes the songs is what is very different,
mm-hmm.
And just feels different than what has been done in other productions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why sometimes you're like, wow, is that new? Or this? Because it's set up in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and some characters sing things, or some characters are completely cut in this version, where in the opera you have a lot more people doing a lot more things, and this one is a little more streamlined,
mm-hmm.
about the storytelling, so that is what is in the forefront. Versus just having, you know, like 20 other characters sort of introduced, and they're carrying different plot points. Well, this is a little bit different, where they've kind of streamlined some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what about the music? I know you have another composer, and I was wondering how does she enter into the orchestration?
Yeah, well, Deidre Murray is, you know, one, just a accomplished musician herself.
Mm-hmm.
And her thing, you know, she comes from a jazz background, and her big influence is that some of the arrangements, you know, they just sound a little bit different, and a little bit, at times, a little bit more contemporary. Like It Ain't Necessarily So,
mm-hmm.
is a great example of that, where it's a song, you know, that's done a lot, but this particular arrangement of it is a little jazzier and a little bit more contemporary, but yet has the same feel of the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of that way throughout, I think, where in I Got Plenty of Nuttin' that Porgy sings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I could tell that was that's nice.
Yeah, so, right, so, you know, like, she definitely, you know, she added the element of accordion versus a banjo. Like, it's traditionally done with, it's a banjo song.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, for some of us, that's a hard, it's hard to hear a banjo.
Mm-hmm.
With that particular song. So, you know, it's like, okay, let's use another folk instrument. Well, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
So she added an accordion, and just the feel of the piece is, you know, is very different than, but that's definitely Deirdre's, you know, fingerprint is on that particular arrangement of the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, interesting. So you were understudy on Broadway, and you went on, and now, you know, here in San Francisco, you're the star, you and Alicia. So how does that work, and what's your Porgy's backstory?
Well, Porgy's backstory?
Yeah, how did he, you know, get where he is, and how old is he, and is he around the same age as Bess, or is she a little older than him? And where is his family? Because he seems like he lives by himself before she joins him.
Yeah, I think, well, let's see, to talk about the first part of your question.
mm-hmm.
Well, I think with Alicia and I, we were both with the production from the beginning, like mm-hmm. the early stages in New York. We workshopped the piece, and so that was even before we went to Boston, and we had our run in Boston, and Alicia, she got a chance to go on while we were in Boston, and so she's definitely, you know, had more time, you know, to be best and developed. When we got to New York and did the Broadway run, that was when some of my first shows to go on for Norm Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just incredible. I mean, you know, the one thing about being an understudy is that, and both of us in particular, we had roles in the show as well. So we were on every night.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't just sort of in the wings waiting all the time. Like, we had things to do every night in the show. But one thing that's great is that, you know, you never know when you're going to get that call. And, you know, we're all human, so sometimes, you know, there's sickness or, you know, personal things in lives that will cause an understudy to go on. So you just have to, you know, always laugh, and you know, I say you always have to keep your lamps trimmed and burning, because you just you never know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then to Porgy's backstory, I don't want to share too much, because I feel like it, you know, some of it is very personal,
mm-hmm.
and that you know, in your storytelling on the stage, that you think it just heightens what I do, but, you know, I don't think all of that is necessarily public information.
No problem.
But, you know, I think he's someone that there's a real connection with him and Mariah,
mm-hmm.
and she's that mother role in his life that he doesn't have, and so, and her as the matriarch of the community, she definitely, you know, takes care of him but also protects him.
Mm-hmm.
So she provides for him but also protects him. And I think he's, you know, very close to the community. And I think, you know, whatever, you know, age or, you know, anything like that, I think that's left to the audiences. You know, I think my biggest thing is just for audiences to walk out of there just thinking that it's a believable love
mm-hmm.
story, and that they look like they're in love, and they seem like they're in love, and it feels that way, and they sound like they're in love, and that if the circumstances were different, that they would live their lives completely together as old men and women. So in that sense, I think I just leave it up to the audience's imagination and sort of fill in the blanks of age and all of that per se.
Right. Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I it's just way more important that it looks like, could they be together? Like,
mm-hmm.
Do they look like they could be together? And if that's the case, then we've done our job for the evening.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely your Porgy and Alicia's Bess are in love.
Well, as I said before, she doesn't make that hard at all.
Yeah. So I have a couple more questions.
Oh, sure.
I was wondering if you could maybe talk a little bit about the librettist and the story, Du Bois and Dorothy Haywood, and just sort of this story. It's rooted in the Black community, but it's written by non-African Americans. And then I was thinking about, the Gershwins, and then I was thinking about, Scott Joplin and his operas, like Tremonisha and others, and how a lot of people don't know Joplin's work, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of the whole idea of, sort of what gets main stage and what is not, and just sort of the politics of this.
Yeah, let's see. I think Du Bois Haywood, he was someone that, he wrote the novel,
mm-hmm.
Porgy, and then there was the play that his wife sort of wrote and then came, the opera. The novel was a hit at the time, and it was enough that, George Gershwin read it and was inspired by it and wanted to, set it to music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the core, it was that, I think Du Bois Haywood was really interested in making these people from this particular, Charleston, South Carolina community, this Black community, make them real people. And I think he respected and admired these people that, he had been around the majority of his life. And I think, he did his best to put it to paper and make, antagonists and protagonists that were people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something that's there that's kind of striking, because he could easily have written about many other experiences and other things. And he was so enamored by this community that he was surrounded by. And so, he chose just rich material that he found in our community. And I think someone like George Gershwin, who, at the time was coming out of, writing a lot of popular music and was having even some appeal in the classical music as well, but really, coming from a jazz background where our forefathers and mothers, are the pillars of that music, this kind of story lent itself to his talents.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think So you have two people that are not necessarily of this community, but have like such an appreciation for the culture and the sounds mm-hmm. that you know they worked really well together. And so someone of George Gershwin's popularity and background is interesting that he chose to write it operatically, and as he describes it, as a folk opera. When you choose the styles of music that he was borrowing from, whether it's, you know, like spirituals and jazz, that isn't going to necessarily fit neatly in a classical music box for everyone. And he was already sort of deemed, a pop music kind of a guy. So Porgy and Bess, you know, it didn't originate in opera houses. So it kind of already was written as an opera, but kind of premiered in musical theater houses and theater houses. So that already sort of set up a big thing of like, well, what is this? And then you have a all black cast singing operatically. You know, it already is sort of it doesn't fit neatly in any boxes for anyone. And so that history is sort of, you know, you know, that's at the very, very beginning from the start. So, you know, we fast forward many, many years now, you know, some 7+ decades, almost 8 decades now. It premiered in 1935.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Boston too.
So, you know, so now we fast forward all these many years. I think it's just an amazing piece that at times has had a complicated history with the black community at times. But what's beautiful is that I think before, just a lot of thought and care went into creating fully realized characters in this particular production, and that we're not just sort of archetypes of people of good and bad, and you know, but Susan Laurie was really big on like, no, let's make them full people. We see their strengths and we see their weaknesses, and the, you know, dramatically, that's only going to enhance the storytelling. And so I think, you know, for those very reasons, I think, you know, a lot of different audiences can walk away from seeing this production and be proud of it. And I can't say that that happens with every single production of Porgy and Bess, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And we want to make sure we mention that that George Gershwin's brother Ira Gershwin wrote the lyrics.
Oh yeah, I mean he was definitely an integral part in, you know, bringing it to the stage musically. I mean, his lyrics of It Ain't Necessarily So, I mean, it's just, they're brilliant. And so with his brother's music, I mean, you know, that's just one of the greatest songwriting teams ever. Mm-hmm. But I also think, you know, regarding your other question about, you know, how it gets done or why it gets done,
mm-hmm.
That's something I can't really speak to because, you know, I'm not in those rooms sort of making those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, Porgy and Bess has such a wonderful history of many, many of this country's greatest artists that we've ever produced, you know, touching this material. Mm-hmm. So whether it's Cab Calloway, Leontine Price, William Moorfield, Maya Angelou being a dancer in the show back in the 50s when they toured Europe, that many of our greatest artists have touched this piece. So there's a wonderful legacy, Grace Bumrey, Simon Estes, I mean, the list goes on and on, that it's been a, what's been wonderful is that it's been a way to showcase our greatest artists from the first Porgy and Bess, Todd Duncan and Ann Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's, you know, humbling to be a part of that, you know, rich legacy of artists.
Right. Last question.
Sure.
It might be like a one and a half part one. I wanted to ask you if you could maybe share your preparation, your artistic preparation, because I know that you've done a lot of musical theater. Just sort of, you know, your musical preparation to be able to step into this role and bring all that you bring to it to make it unique and wonderful for us. Why don't you tell us sort of about your, you know, your training and just sort of how you happen to be the right man for this particular role in this moment right now?
Well, first of all, I'll just say I won't even beat around the bush. I mean, I think it's just divine intervention that I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are more than hundreds of capable men that, you know, I'm sure would do much, bring more to the role than what I'm doing. But I've been blessed to have this honor to, you know, to be out on this tour and be in that Broadway production. I feel like there's some doing of my own, but then there's more at play that, you know, my dad is a pastor.
Hmm.
My mom is a musician at our church. I grew up in Milwaukee, and so for me to, you know, just say, oh, I did this and I did that, when I know I have a church full of people praying for me and, you know, wishing me well would be a little bit selfish. So I come from a background where, you know, I have a strong support, spiritual support base that I know is leading and guiding me in everything that I'm doing. So it's just divine intervention that I'm here. I think I've always, when I was in high school, I had a chance to be in the opera chorus of Porgy and Bess.
Oh, wow.
And the incredible Donny Ray Albert was the Porgy, and mm-hmm. he's the Porgy that's on the that pivotal production at the Houston Grand Opera, with John Demain as the conductor. He was the Porgy that sort of brought Porgy and Bess sort of back into, really brought it to the forefront in classical music and to opera houses, and that production really was pivotal. And so he was our Porgy when we had a production of it in Milwaukee at the Florentine Opera Company. And I just remember being around all of these incredibly trained and accomplished, world-renowned artists, and being in the opera chorus, like, one day if I could ever, you know, do what they're doing, you know, I would be a happy man.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are, you know, many decades later, I'm living out that dream. You know, I was like, I don't know, 15 years old
mm-hmm.
in that chorus, and it still, on occasion, you know, I won't lie to you, like, it kind of catch, you know, I have to catch my breath, like, is this really happening?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is amazing. You know, you set goals, or, you know, or you have dreams, and sometimes you even forget that you had that dream because it was so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there's a path that's been carved out that, you know, we're walking along, and it still amazes me, and I'm still humbled by all of it. So I don't take any of this for granted. And far as the preparation, I think, well, first of all, I had a major knee injury when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. So I know what it's like to have difficulty walking. It took me about over 2 years to rehab my knee.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. So I know what that's like. You know, I know what it's like for people to look at you a certain way and sort of overhelp at times. And, you know, there's a, when you know you're capable of doing things and people want to do more than they should. And so, like, I've definitely had those feelings before. I've definitely done a lot of research with, like, wounded veterans. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, you know, homeless people and people that beg on the street. And that for a lot of people, there's still pride is there. But their circumstances are not something to be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a pride that is there that I think I try to tap into, because, you know, it's too easy to just look at someone on the street and just think, oh, you know, they're nothing. We can just walk over them or walk past them. And it's like, you don't even know who this person is. This person may have defended the country or, you know, has been a person of prominence and they lost everything. So, you know, there's a dignity that I try to bring to the role, and a humanity that even if someone is disabled, that doesn't mean that, you know, that they aren't strong or they don't have desires or betterment for their life. So I think those are some of the things that help inform my nightly performance of Porgy, and that, you know, just because of the way we might look, it doesn't define truly who we are.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, he's someone that's full of life, and, you know, we meet the right person or we're in the right circumstance, and our lives can completely change. And and Bess is that key that kind of unlocks sort of the mystery of who Porgy is, and that he fully comes to life by the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he certainly does. And, yeah, we definitely see that Porgy is a man with dignity and pride. And even if he, you know, can't necessarily, you know, take Crown on. Crown is a real big guy.
Yeah.
He's a huge, oh my God. Not many people can take Crown on.
No, it's true. And, you know, and what's brilliant, though, about that fight,
yeah,
though, is that in order for that to work, he has to bring him to his level.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes him down with the cane, and then the fight becomes a little more fair.
Right.
So there's a, you know, that leverage kind of a thing. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Porgy is a real, he's smart. You know? Yeah. He's an intelligent man. He's real thoughtful. He thinks a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, but I, but it also comes from, you know, if you think about someone who is begging on the street,
mm-hmm,
for 10, 12 hours of a day, that's a lot of time, you know, and most people aren't in dialogue with people that beg on the street.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of time to think.
That's true.
But it also is a lot of time to observe other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Porgy is someone that can see who people really are. You know, when you're sitting all day and you're watching, you know, you're not only seeing different classes of people, but you're seeing different personalities and how, like, one little gesture can really tell a lot about a relationship between a husband and a wife,
mm-hmm.
or how they interact with their children, or how the children interact with adults. Like, you know, he's observing life every day, all day. And then he comes back to the community every evening. And then, you know, sometimes he's sharing stories or, you know, spending his money, you know, in the crap games and things.
Mm-hmm.
But he's an observer. And I think, and that informs, you know, his wishes and dreams. And, you know, but also he's thinking that, well, this is my lot in life. God wanted me to be lonely. I'm seeing beautiful women walk by me every day, but God, you know, God meant for me to be lonely. I can't change that. But that doesn't mean he doesn't want it to change.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, yeah, I know I'm over-answering all of your questions.
No, that's okay. No, that's great.
I get excited at times talking about Porgy because it's such a great role. And, you know, God knows if I, you know, ever get a chance to play such a wonderful role again. But it's just like, mm-hmm. you know, while I have the baton, I'm going to try to do my best with it.
Right, yeah. It's really something how you, you know, you wanted to, you know, you thought about this, you know, when you were 15 and here you are, you know, an adult and you're actually in this particular position to realize that dream. Are there any other roles that you think about, like you did about Porgy?
Man, you know, I have a couple other roles that I have in mind,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, hopefully we'll have this interview some years down the line and we can laugh about that.
Oh, that'd be so cool. Yeah, yeah.
I'm somebody, you know, I don't want to share all my seeds before they really develop, so.
That's okay.
But, maybe down the line we'll have another chance to talk and
mm-hmm.
I'll say, well, this Wanda, this was it. This was the one.
Yeah, that'd be great. That would really be great. It's like, yeah, your harvest comes in, you can invite me to the feast.
Oh, absolutely. And everybody's invited, for sure, for sure.
That'd be awesome, yeah. So, obviously you went to university to, I guess, to polish and fine-tune your craft. Where'd you go to school?
I studied at University of Wisconsin, Madison.
Okay.
And I have my bachelor's in music and voice
mm-hmm.
there. And I thought that I was sort of on the opera trajectory.
Yes.
And, you know, just ended up doing a lot of musical theater. After school, I went with my father. We spent some time doing some mission work in West Africa.
Oh, what country?
We went to Senegal.
Nice.
And later on, we've been to Ghana and the Gambia.
Oh.
And, you know, and then I eventually, once I got back stateside, I moved to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And that move was what really sparked the career that I have now.
Mm-hmm.
So that was almost 15 plus years ago.
Okay, yeah. So there are a lot of similarities between the South Side and and Catfish Row.
Oh, man. Well, I guess, you know what I mean, like with homicide and
uh-huh.
stuff.
Yeah, and drugs and, yeah, and there being a black community and, yeah, sort of in despair. As Catfish Row is not in despair, but I from what I read about the South Side of Chicago, you know, with taking all the services out, like mental health and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are no jobs, and the schools are horrible. Yeah, it's just, and yet, you know, there are plenty of guns and plenty of drugs.
Yeah, you know, that's all true and absolutely accurate. And yet there are pockets where people are, you know, are still safe.
Oh, really?
And, you know, and that people are still growing and progressing and contributing to society.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you're saying is absolutely true, and yet it's not 100% homicide rate. Mm-hmm. So there are some of our young men and women that are still productive and are geniuses in waiting, and because it's hard to hear those statistics, and it's hard to see parts of our community in the circumstances that they're in,
mm-hmm.
and yet because I didn't have the best, I wasn't raised in the best areas in Milwaukee, and yet here we are, on a whole another part of the country, speaking about some of my accomplishments. So,
mm-hmm.
In spite of circumstances, it's never 100% failure in any of our communities.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, not by a long shot.
Yeah.
I mean, our president and his wife, our first lady is from Chicago. And,
right,
I've got cousins and my auntie was there, and you think about the Emmett Till's family, his
mm-hmm.
mother,
mm-hmm.
They actually were in town in Oakland this past week. There was a play in San Francisco called Emmett Till, A River at Eugene Theater, and so the Tills came out and they did some talks and they were on a panel and they spoke at Allen Temple. So, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, nothing is 100%.
There are.
I'm glad you mentioned those pockets of goodness. Pockets of light.
And they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm,
they're
certainly.
Everywhere.
Certainly.
And man, but I just have to say, I don't know what it is about the Bay Area, but I don't know if it's the water or what, but it's like the Bay Area has contributed so much to Black people all over the world that it blows my mind to be here. And there's so much history here from, from the gospel, Hawkins to the Black Panthers. I mean, I'm like, man, what is it about the Bay Area? There's something in the water here that isn't just local. Like, the things that happen locally and then they just go internationally. So it's just so fascinating to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And that the show is here and we're starting this national tour here. But, my hat goes off to the Bay Area, really, and to all our ancestors that have been here. 'Cause it's just a unique part of the country that I don't think we applaud enough, so.
Hmm. Yeah, wow. Yeah, the president was in San Francisco yesterday. Did he pop through the theater and check y'all out?
Alicia had a chance to perform for the president, as a matter of fact.
What?
Yesterday with her husband, Jason Moran.
Really?
Yes. Her husband... Mm-hmm. Is quite an accomplished jazz musician.
Oh yeah, I know.
And and so they're just an amazing couple. But she's met the president on several occasions, mm-hmm. and so she got to sing yesterday for him.
Oh wow!
So yeah.
Oh, but you weren't in the room, huh?
No. No, I was not. But I was cheering from afar.
Well, next time. Oh, wow. That's amazing. Oh, that's really wonderful.
Yes, for sure, for sure.
Wow. Well, this has been a really wonderful conversation. I want to thank you so much.
Oh, well, thanks for the interview and the care and the thoughtful questions, because that isn't always the case.
Oh, really?
No, so I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah. Well, that was our interview with Nathaniel Stampley, who is Porgy in the Shuin production presented with the American Repertory Theater of Gershwin's Porgy and Bess by George Gershwin, Du Bois, and Dorothy Hayward, and Ira Gershwin, with the book adaptation by Susan Laurie Parks, music score adaptation by Deidre L. Murray, with Alicia Hall Moran as Bess, and Nathaniel Stampley again as Porgy, Samaya Ali, Denisha Balu, Dan Barnhill, Danielle Lee Greaves, and David Hewley, along with Alvin Crawford and Kingsley Legs, and some of the main roles, and directed by Diane Paulus. And again, this is up at the Golden Gate Theater in San Francisco through December 8th, Tuesdays through Sundays, and there are some matinees, I believe, during the weekend, on the weekends. So it's a really wonderful production, and it was really, really fun speaking to Nathaniel. He is a great Porgy. And I was just thinking as I was listening that, oh my goodness, I'm just assuming that everybody knows the story. So the story actually takes place tell you where it takes place. It takes place in the late 1930s on Catfish Row and Kittawa Island in Charleston, South Carolina. And it's a sort of a rural town where the main industry is fishing, because it's right there on the water. And there is Porgy. He lives in the town. He's disabled. He begs for a living. And then there are these other characters who, like I said, you know, make their livings, you know, honest livings, fishing, and the women, you know, they take care of the foam front. And then there are these sort of, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the type of character, but characters, people come to town. Characters come to town. These people come to town. Crown and his girlfriend Bess. I think it's the weekend, and they're people have just gotten paid, and they're shooting craps. And so Crown comes in with Bess, and as Nathaniel mentions, you know, Bess, portrayed by Alicia Hall Moran, you know, she has on this beautiful red dress, and she's just striking, and she's just gorgeous. But, you know, she's a fast woman, you know, in that, you know, the women don't necessarily want her in town because she might tempt their husbands. And then there's also another character, Sportin' Life, and he's portrayed by Kingsley Legs, and he, you know, he's a drug dealer, and he's just like, you see him coming, you need to just shut your door if you can't get rid of him, because he just seems to, like, never go away. And sort of the interaction, you know, between the community and these other people that come to town to sort of disrupt the calm nature of their life, so like almost like a village life. And then meanwhile, you know, as Daniel mentions, there's a hurricane is coming, And they're not exactly certain that the hurricane is actually going to touch down, it's going to come, but people are getting prepared, and the fishermen are maybe cautious. Maybe they don't want to go out and fish because the hurricane is coming. So that's coming, that's happening. And then the community gets together and they go, you know, they have these community picnics where they just have fun. The women get all dressed up and they play games and things like that. And that's really fun because what happens is that Bess and Porgy, they hook up and they become a couple. Crown leaves after, sort of getting into trouble with the law. He sort of goes into hiding, and I won't spoil it for you what happens in the story just in case you don't know it. So Crown goes away, and Bess hooks up with Porgy and trying to get her life together, you know, giving up the drugs. And Porgy, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, you know, he helps her sort of maintain her sobriety and sort of realize her innate goodness. You know, something that she hadn't been able to cultivate, you know, hanging out with people like Crown, who's an outlaw. And certainly Sporting Life is, you know, an outlaw as well, but he's more sneaky and more insidious. You know, like I said, he's like a fly that you can't get rid of. Even when you try to exterminate him, he just won't go away. So that's the story, and the story of Bess and Porgy and their love for each other and Bess's challenges with drug addiction and low self-esteem and feeling unworthy to be around these people who are basically good at heart and don't have the type of challenges that she has because they're not city people, they're country people. So they don't have, you know, the type of vices and temptations that one might have when one is, you know, sort of, you know, in the world, so to speak. As well as, you know, she does know God, but she hasn't necessarily been around people to help her sort of realize that connection as well either. So that's the story, and it's just really, really wonderfully played out in this rendition of the opera, which is more musical theater than it is opera. And like I said, it's just simply fabulous. So you don't want to miss it. So definitely, go online and visit the website and get your tickets. And there are no more discounts through operas through Afro Solo. But you can get tickets at shnsf.com or call 888-746-1799. Peace and blessings. And don't forget to tune in on Friday. We're going to have a live show, even though it's the day after Thanksgiving. And maybe you might not want to go spend money at Black Friday. There are going to be a lot of pickets and protests. So we're going to end with another piece by... Actually, maybe we'll do something by McLeet. Let's see. I just saw her name. I just love McLeet. And congratulations to Margot Hall on a wonderful, wonderful Bebop Baby, a musical memoir. She was simply fantastic. Gosh, what happened? I just lost her. McLeet Hadaro. Oh, here's Lord Gregory. Lord Gregory's going to be at, he is going to be at the 57th Street Gallery, where Melvin Butts and featuring Kwame Thompson, oh my goodness, they were so good. Oh, Lord have mercy, they were great. They were absolutely fabulous. So let's put a little bit of Lord Gregory. Definitely you all don't want to miss him. He's going to be at 57th Street Gallery the week after next. And here's Lord Gregory's El Espiritu de Diana from Gentle Warrior. Thank you.